I'm going to go ahead and welcome everybody to the 72nd Annual FCB Convention. This is the legislative session. I want to thank Allison Smitherman for hosting, Larry for streaming, and Joyce for moderating in our Zoom room. So thank you guys very much. I'm going to introduce the president of the Florida Council of the Blind, Mikey Wiseman.
Hello, everyone. And hello to Larry and Joyce, and hi, Allison. Thank you guys for facilitating. I know we're running just a few minutes late, so thank everyone. I want to thank everyone for their patience. I'm going to go ahead and we do have our facilitators coming in. In the meantime, I was asked to come in by Her Majesty Lady Grubb, as I like to affectionately refer to her. And give you guys an update and some kudos. So it's as a young president and a new president coming up on my 1 year anniversary at this convention. Thank you for the applause. I am really proud of some of the challenges that we faced organizationally. And not only that did we face them, we seem to have really made a name for ourselves and squashed them. For many of you within the state of Florida, you will know that we were facing some very interesting legislative initiatives that were introduced, which had the possibility, pretty much assured possibility, to have some significant negative impacts to the delivery of services for individuals who are blind and visually impaired, and quite frankly, to most individuals who are with any disability in vocational rehabilitation program, whether it be the general agency or the blind agency specific. And we did have a call to arms. We did ask a lot of you to do a lot of things, primarily reach out, phone, call, and we were very successful. We made a name for ourselves. Whether that is a good thing or a bad thing, the jury is still out. But a lot of people in Florida know who the Florida Council of the Blind is right now. We did end up having a very high level conversation with some of the directors of the agency involved, making a grab for us as potential candidates or consumers or participants. And as I've been known to do, I told them exactly what was on my mind. And I let them know who we are and what we expect, and they kind of pointed out where they did not look at the big picture. Shortly after that call ended, we got the notification that they were just going to leave us the hell alone, right? That's just the bottom line, and that's what we wanted. So congratulations to Florida Council of Blind and its members for their efforts. It really was a big win for us, and we made a great name for ourselves. So please give yourselves a round of applause. That being said, the landscape, I keep telling everybody, okay, now I've been president for a year. And you guys have to excuse me. If you're in the room, I'm not standing up. Because for those of you who know, I can't stand up. So I'm actually sitting down. So I apologize. I should be at the podium, but it'll all work out. Moving forward, I want you guys to bring FCB, and when I say FCB, I mean our legislative committee, your state concerns. I have already spoken to the presidents. It is my expectation that over the next couple of years, Florida Council of the Blind is going to re-engage at a statewide advocacy and continue to build those bridges with the legislature, with the agencies that serve us, to have some familiarity with the folks who are making impactful decisions about our lives in Tallahassee. That doesn't mean that we're going to chuck whatever's happening at the national level, but I believe that our dollars at this point are more effectively spent and can be more inclusively spent for our members within the state. There have been a few initiatives brought up to us, and this is going to catch Debbie by surprise because she wasn't on the president's call, but I think we're going to start looking at some intra-state transportation issues. Our TD councils have not heard from us, are not being represented by us. And there's a lot of decisions, and there was a lot of scuttlebug at some point about train service. We've lost the east-west corridor on the panhandle. There was some discussion. There was a big survey put out about a train station to Tallahassee, which is, for the love of Christ, it's our state capital, folks, and we can't get there. So how are we expected to advocate if we can't get there? So these are some things that I have on my big board that once we get through the burden and the excitement of convention that we are going to be looking at. But I can't come up with all these initiatives on my own. And Debbie has enough thoughts in her head that she's, we need you. We are a membership-driven organization. We want to hear from you guys. So if you're dealing with a particular challenge, if you're aware of a conversation that's happening either on your local TD board or your statewide TD board, let us know. It's getting harder and harder. Some counties are retracting paratransit services, which is not what we are looking for. We do not want to retract. We want to make it more expansive. So those are a few things that we have on it. I want to thank Lady Grubb and all of the folks who gave so much of their time and their money and their persona to make it up to DC, to the DC Leadership Conference, and being present there as usual. Florida had a good presence. Those of us that were there collaborating with each other really helped each other out and worked as a team. And that spoke volumes for those that were there and made themselves known to the Florida delegation and were willing to participate. On behalf of the Executive Committee, Florida Council of Blind, for those of you who went, who followed up, I know a few of you didn't make it but still took some Zoom meetings. I wanted to thank you guys. And I am going to pass this over now. I want to thank Jeff for being here. Jeff, where are you? Okay. All the way from across the Mississippi, folks. We made it here. So I'm going to hand this over to Debbie Grubb. And of course, at any time, the Zoom, are we good? Did anybody have any questions or comments before I hand it over?
We have no raised hands right now, Mikey.
Well, that hurts my feelings that nobody wants to talk to me. Maybe they'll get excited for Debbie. Here you go, folks. It is my pleasure to introduce you to the chair of Florida's Legislative Committee, Ms. Debbie Grubb.
Thank you, everybody. It is a joy to be here. And I just want to say that I really want to commend and thank Mr. Paul Edwards, who, when we began having our problem with the entity that wouldn't leave us alone, I go, I don't know what all this is about exactly, and I want to be able to speak with some level of expertise. He sent me a paper. I used that as a foundation point to write my own paper to get you all of you who would, to reach out to your legislators in the state. And so thanks to Paul and, of course, our dear Mikey, who is so passionate and took those meetings and set the house on fire. So we're very blessed to have a past president, Paul Edwards, and our current president, Mikey Wiseman, and we're just so delighted. We're going to talk now about our next state initiative, and that is the coalition that we had with DBS, with the veterans, with us, with, who else, Mikey? And FOSBI, yes. Yeah, I was going to say that. Anyway, we had a wonderful day in Tallahassee, and one of the major things we talked about, everything we talked about was extremely important, and when Paul gets here, I'm going to leave him some time to talk about this, because both years that we've been to Tallahassee, good old Mr. Edwards was our fearless leader, our president, and we saw just about everybody in the Florida legislature this year. There was a time, I'm sure all of you know, when we had something quite wonderful called the Vision Caucus. And we made trips to Tallahassee every year. And when that fell apart and then COVID came, we began to lose our state focus. And I want to commend Mikey and before him, Sheila, too, for making it very clear to all of us that we, that although our national initiatives are extremely important, that we need to have more of a state presence. And so we don't know what next year is going to look like for our state presence, but we are going to have one and we will be going to Tallahassee. We are going to be meeting and we're going to be doing these things. So we will be doing that. And it's really pretty exciting. And I just want to say that I so much appreciate all the people that came to the legislative seminar, part of the DC leadership in DC. And it was a very different ball of wax this year because most of our leaders were in one building. So I want to commend all of our people who came to DC. Mr. Wiseman, Mr. Edwards, of course, Mr. Paul Lewis. And I also want to commend the people that hung out with me, Chantel Napier and her good friend, Courtney Williams, and Marsha Bucala, who was just very, very helpful, and me. And I also, our dear friend, Sheila, past president, I said, I'm going to stop having roommates because Sheila was my roommate for the DC leadership seminar, and she fell down and broke her foot or fractured something. Today, my dear friend Kathy Salemi, who is now rooming with me, has a terrible migraine. So I think it's time for me to give up having roommates. Picking them off. But seriously, I want to thank all of those people who came. It was a wonderful experience. It was hard for Marsha, Chantal, and me because we had just about everybody and we ran our hearts and our feet off. I do want to say a couple of general things before we get into people talking about the legislative imperatives. I want to say that what we found as we moved throughout and we saw just about everyone either by Zoom or in person in our seminar. And I also want to thank, I was having terrible troubles getting an appointment with the office of Senator Ashley Moody, even though I said, well, when Marco Rubio was in power, we saw somebody every year. They didn't care about that. But Marsha was up there with an organization that she is involved with, and they had arranged a meeting at the office, and so she spoke up for us. And John Marco said that he would be so glad to see us, and that was a wonderful thing. And we've had some wonderful Zoom meetings, and we've had some wonderful visits. And what I'm going to tell you is, I know people hear the word Republican, and they want to throw spitballs, many people. But what I'm going to say is, we had, in both parties, listening ears, and I do believe, on one level, open hearts. And what I said to every Republican that we visited, I said, none of us want waste and fraud because that harms all of us. But before you pick up the pen and begin to slash programs, please make sure that your member is aware of who these programs help, who these programs are in business to train, to educate, to help find employment, and to care for those who need it. And so I don't know what the outcome will be, but what I know is we all felt positive vibes in the offices that we visited, and we felt that we were heard. And I think that they will know what the members will do. I can't guarantee that, neither can anybody else. But I think in many ways, because of the change in administration and everything, we had one of our most, in a very strange way, and this may sound a bit bizarre to you, but I think, given the circumstances of the administrative change and everything that has happened in this country, this in terms of the legislative assistants with whom we met, meeting with us, being engaged in what we had to say, making really meaningful comments. And of course, as many of you know, all of our legislative imperatives this year were some sort of access to communication, to websites, to medical equipment. And we could give them so many, and the people on my team gave so many heartfelt examples of what the lack of access to these entities meant. And these young kids, and many of them, most of them are under 30, maybe some of them early 30s, 40s at the oldest, they haven't been in the world without all of this technology. And so I think they really got it on a visceral level. And we saw a lot of people. I know several people were telling me they had so much trouble making appointments. What I'm going to tell you is it takes people helping us along, and it takes not giving up. Emailing until people get so sick of hearing from you, they say yes, just to stop you from filling their inbox, and making phone calls and follow-ups, and sending good people in to talk to them so that our organization has a reputation of really knowing what we're talking about and conducting good meetings. And so I just want to say that I thank all the people that joined us on the Hill, and it is my fervent prayer that we have more successful meetings. And the work is not done by any means. We will probably be asking you to call your legislators, both on the state and the federal side, about issues. We will always try to give you a template that will give you the key things that we need for you to talk about. And so that's what we need. So I'm hoping that we can have more and more of you reaching out to contact these people. And I just want to say I've been doing this a long time, and it is such an honor that I keep being asked to come back, maybe because nobody else is foolish enough to do it. But it is wonderful to have people like Sheila before him and Mikey now to work with, to care about the legislative issues that our organization faces, that face our people. But no matter what we do, no matter how much we write, no matter what we say, if they don't hear from you, it isn't as meaningful. So I just wanted to clarify all of that. And now, because I hear my good friend Mr. Edwards is now in the room, I know, I said you're in the room. Anyway, well, now that he's here, I want him to talk to you in more detail about our Tallahassee Days, because this is our new foray into a state presence. And as I said, as I concluded my brief comments about it, we will be having a state presence next year. But for 2 years, Paul has fearlessly and wonderfully led us, and I want him to talk to you a bit about the Tallahassee Days, what our initiatives were, our imperatives were, how we all work together, and anything else that he wants to say about our time in Tallahassee and our preparation for said time. So without further ado, I'm turning the mic over to Mr. Paul Edwards.
Good afternoon, everyone. So about 3 years ago, we discovered that there were a lot of legislators in Tallahassee that didn't have a very good idea of what blind people were all about. Because for the last several years, no one really in the blindness system was spending a lot of time dealing with legislators in Tallahassee. So working with the Florida Rehab Council for the Blind and working with consumer organizations like the National Federation of the Blind of Florida and FCB and Blind Veterans of Florida, and also working with the organization that operates lighthouses all over Florida, the Florida Association, Florida Agency Serving the Blind Group, we decided that we were going to begin the process of making sure legislators knew who we were. So 2 years ago, we did our first Tallahassee Day and made no actual requests of legislators, but really just said, we want you to know we're here. We wanted blind folks with dogs and blind folks with canes and folks who were interested in blindness and our issues to actually get to see legislators. So we made the mistake that first year of going when the legislature was in session. And that turned out to be a mistake because it was very hard to see legislators and even difficult to see staffers. So after the first year, we changed our approach somewhat. And this year, we went during the committee phase and got to see a bunch more people. But we also had three specific requests of legislators, none of them involving lots of money, but actually beginning to focus on some of the needs that we had. So the first thing that we asked them to do was to take a look at the white cane law and recognize that there were a number of things about the white cane law that weren't working well, and ask them if they would intervene with the folks at the state level who are administering traffic laws to do a few things. One, can you please ensure that there is some kind of a database so that if there are accidents that involve blind people, they get reported? Second, can you assure that high school classes and driver education and police training includes information about the white cane law? And third, can you provide enough questions so that every time somebody takes a driver's exam, they're going to get a question on the white cane law? And so that was the first issue. The second issue is a fairly straightforward one. The Division of Blind Services has the ability to get approximately $4 of federal money for every $1 of state allocation that is made. The problem is that the state has had a habit of not allocating sufficient dollars to enable the Division of Blind Services to draw down the funds that they need. So we asked the legislators to please be aware of that in putting together their final budget. And the third issue that we raised was an issue that everyone here already knows about, and that is that we are in the midst of a huge problem where very, very rapidly the numbers of older people who are blind or who are losing their vision is growing. The expectation is those numbers will double in the next 20 years. So we said to legislators, you need to recognize that the only resource that we have that will begin to try to deal with this issue is getting more money from state legislators. So we ask them to please be aware and to recognize that they need to at least consider the fact that over the next 20 years, either you're going to allocate more money so they can get the training that they need to be functional at home, or you can pay for them to go into nursing homes at 4 or 5 or 6 times the cost. So those were our three presentations. I think overall that we were pretty successful this year at getting our information across, at seeing loads of people, at demonstrating a lot of cooperation. Is there more that we should be asking the legislature to do? Absolutely. Should we continue to concentrate on working at the state level even more? Absolutely. Because it doesn't appear at the federal level that there is a lot of sympathy out there for programs that deal with folks with disabilities or for issues that would immediately work in our favor. So we believe that it's more important to concentrate at the state level and to hopefully get more from them where there isn't quite as much gridlock as there is, well, there wasn't, but there is this year, but there wasn't quite as much gridlock in the state legislature, though there is to an extent this year. And I guess, Debbie, do you want me to start talking about what we had to deal with after the legislature? Okay. One of the reasons that we get involved, and one of the reasons why I think that the Tallahassee Day was so effective, is that suddenly folks knew about blindness issues. So the proposal that Mikey told you about, which involved a move of the Division of Blind Services and VR to an entirely different organization that had no notion of how to deal with us, was pretty scary. But legislators knew that we were there and knew about blindness issues and therefore listened when we said to them, this is not a good plan. There was another bill that would have required everyone who wanted to vote by using an absentee ballot that is accessible to provide medical information about their condition and why they qualified for these special ballots. Now, clearly, that was a violation of everything under the sun, so it was another issue that we had to attack. There was another bill that directly concerned what would happen to positions with the Division of Blind Services if they weren't filled within a period of time. They had 90 days to fill positions, and if the positions weren't filled, they'd be taken away. That would have significantly limited the ability of the Division of Blind Services to provide good services. But again, because of Tallahassee Day, all three of these initiatives have either been snubbed or completely wiped out. The voting went away. The voting issue went away. Obviously, the move to APD went away. That's gone. And the third issue with regard to positions, we're facing two different budgets which still haven't been adopted by the legislature. So the House budget still has some vestiges of what we're talking about with regard to positions. We're hoping that the Senate budget is the one that gets adopted, but right now there's still something of a battle royal going on in Tallahassee. And we may not know the answer in terms of exactly how the budget will pan out until June. So that's what I can tell you about state legislation, and I think I will now pass it back to Ms. Deborah.
I want to say a couple of things. Paul is a little bit modest. I don't know if some of you know me really well, but I feel very strongly about things. And when we were working with Tallahassee Days in preparation, we were being generalists, and we weren't having the kind of asks, and we weren't going to the people, publicizing these things to the people that could help us get those asks. And so I got a little, I guess, obnoxious. I hope not. But I will say that I got a message from Brandis Hall telling me she was glad I was on the committee. I don't know if she had her tongue in her cheek or not. But what I would tell you is that Paul was true to the code of doing the right thing, but he treated every single person, no matter what organization they represented, with kindness and dignity and respect. And I think that's a lesson that we all can learn. We all don't agree on everything, but we can't tear down that proverbial table that we used to talk about, where we all come and sit and we listen and we speak. And I just want to say that in the Florida Council of the Blind, Paul Edwards really exemplified all of that. And it was a pleasure to be on the committee with him and to work with him. It was wonderful. Go ahead and give him a hand. Thank you. I want to move on now to the imperatives that we dealt with in D.C. And I want to tell you, we are probably going to need your help, because I told you how overall positive our responses were from the LAs. But unfortunately, we had no legislation attached to any of these imperatives. And sometimes in an office of an LA, if there's not legislation that they can go to and talk to their member about, they get a little dewy-eyed and want to work, play with their phones and stuff. We did have meaningful legislation brought forward in 2024. And we explained that. We provided the necessary bill numbers. ACB did a beautiful job in preparing the papers with the legislative imperatives, giving us the background, what each imperative asked for, why the ask was, and the bill numbers and committee members in the committees that were involved with those. And that was extremely helpful as we planned our strategies on the Hill. I want to say that we really have to begin to talk to our members about not only supporting legislation, but sponsoring legislation. Because the whole point with legislation is it has to come. Somebody's got to have the cojones to bring it forward, to listen to their constituents and to put it in bill form. And then we seek people to support the legislation. So as I say every year, if we all can develop relationships with our legislators, then part of the work is done. Because when we go to them, they know us. They know who we are. And now that a lot of our push will be statewide, it is even more important that we, me included, that we develop relationships with the members of our state legislature. And so I think all of us need to do that. And we are going to try to help you by providing information that will allow you to do that. And I'm going to say what I say every year. Every legislator, being whether they be federal or statewide, have home offices, and they go there, and you can meet with them and go to town hall meetings and have opportunities to speak. I've done that a couple of times in Manatee County, and it's interesting, especially with the state ones, because you begin to be the face and voice of somebody. So when they think of blindness, and maybe this isn't always the best way, but it is a way to open it. You know how you have a key that opens the door? If they look at, if they hear about access to medical equipment, and they think about somebody like Alicia Eidson or Marsha Bukala or any of us that have it, me, any of us, it's not that thing where you're all blind people are seen by the only blind person they know. But if we use this as a key to unlock the door, that we make blind people real to somebody, and we make blind people worthy of mattering to somebody, that is extremely important. So I'm going to say that every couple of weeks, Claire Stanley sends out the legislative, the work that her committee is doing, the advocacy committee. And I think it would behoove all of us to read it. And if it's something that strikes our fancies, nothing keeps us from putting in a phone call. And so I think that we, I'm going to try to make sure, usually Sheila is very good at sending out those kinds of messages to the FCB list. And Katie is wonderful about making sure that the presidents have them so they can get them to their members who don't have access to our listservs, et cetera, et cetera. But this kind of thing is extremely important that we know about. And the point is, you don't have to have an A to Z knowledge of every single thing, like some of the people you're going to hear from in a minute or two. But if you say that it's important to you or somebody dear to you and why that is, you can't believe how many people still don't contact their legislators. If you make a call, that's important. If you send a letter, that is golden. And that still is the truth today. Because sad for us, more people stay at home and complain and feel resentment than go to people that don't think the way we do, don't believe the way we necessarily believe, and try in a kind, respectful way with facts at our disposal to explain to them why whatever initiative is we're talking about is important. Because in a democracy, as you all know, there are times when the party we support, the party we vote for, the persons that we marked on our ballots are not the ones that are elected. But we can't give up on our country. We can't give up on our nation, because that isn't true, because we still have the right. These people represent us, and if they don't, we don't think they understand that, we've got to make it clear to them by our actions and what we say that we understand it, and we expect to be heard, and we expect them to consider what they have to say. So as we embark on this this statewide initiative, your involvement and the involvement of your state chapter, and it would be wonderful if members of your state chapter could go to some meetings or meet with these people and or invite somebody from the office to one of your meetings and get yourselves known. The second part of my soapbox that I say every time is that it is so important that we vote. And I believe with my whole heart that we have the right to choose our way of voting like every other American citizen. But I'm going to tell you, whether you like to hear it or not, we get more bang for our buck when we go into the polling place. We walk in with heads held high. We say, I want to use the accessible ballot. We put the headphones on. And last time, when we send out to you information about when to vote, not how, that's not our purview. But we give you information that will help you to know what you need to do to make your voice heard. And that's what all this is about. It is never our desire to bully you into voting for an initiative or a person. We want to educate you to know why it is important to us and our community, and then you and your friends and your family make the decision. The other thing that's important is, you've got family members, you've got friends who care about you. Go to them. Say, you know, could you also contact Senator Mary Ann Smith and let her know, et cetera, et cetera? We can do this, and we don't have to be policy wonks in order to do it. Having said all that, we're now going to move on to the initiatives that I said had legislature attached to them last year. And there were three of these imperatives. They all had to do with access to communications in today's world. And we're going to begin. Is Marcia in the room? Good. Marcia, I would like it very much if we could hand you the microphone and you could say a few words about the medical device access initiative, okay?
The medical devices, so many of the things that you can do at home aren't accessible for us to do. People with diabetes, people that need kidney dialysis, and things like that. So it's asking that these items going forward be made accessible so that we can do the same type of things. And I always bring up to them too, the transportation is a problem for us. And unfortunately, what happens is people don't end up sometimes getting the, you know, treatments or services they need, and then they end up in the emergency room, and then there's even more costs associated with that.
The important thing is that people have the right to do this at home, and that the way to make these devices accessible already exists. And when we brought this forward before, we made it retroactive. It was ACB's decision not to do that this year, to make it moving forward so that we could at least get a start someplace. Does anybody else who was on the team wish to make a comment about this imperative? I'm going to ask our national guest to talk to us a bit about the website accessibility imperative. And I've also asked him if he would give us some of his best advice about what we as individuals do when we see a website that is not accessible. Most of us do not know what the standards are. Most of us couldn't make a website accessible if our lives depended on it. But our lives and our careers may well depend on it if it's not accessible. So I want you to make welcome Jeff Bishop, who you will also hear tomorrow and tomorrow night. I believe when I invite a national guest to put him to work. So I'm going to ask him to talk about the web access, what we wanted, and what you and I do, whether it's an employment website, whether it's a website for our college that we can't access, whether it's a website into a doctor's office, a portal, what his advice is with we as common everyday users do if we can't do what we need to do on these websites. Jeff?
Good afternoon, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. And this is an area that I'm extremely passionate about, and I think all of us are who are interested in ensuring that we have equal and equitable access to the things that we want to do, whether we're a student, a professional, or a homemaker, whoever that might be, you know, whoever you might be. It's important that we all have access to information in a fully accessible and inclusive way. First, a little bit about me. I'm Jeff Bishop. I'll give you a more of an introduction tomorrow night, but I'm Jeff Bishop. I am the president of Blind Information Technology Specialists, an affiliate with about almost 800 renewing members this year. And we focus in on technology. And one of the things that we're doing right now, actually, is empowering people through teaching them all about web accessibility, WordPress, and understanding how to advocate in the area of web accessibility. So again, we have about 300 students that are from around the world who are participating in that process. I work at the University of Arizona, and I work there as an IT accessibility consultant, where I work with students, faculty, staff, and developers, and engineers, and all those types of people to make sure that our websites, applications, and other services on campus are fully accessible and inclusive for everyone. All right. Well, let's see. Where do we start here? How much time do I have, by the way? Oh, okay. Just tell me when to shut up, because I can go forever. Okay. Let's start by talking about where we are in reference to the law, and then we'll get into some fun things about what you can do from a consumer perspective in reference to just making companies aware. And it's all going to come down to really one word, and that word is communicate. And we'll talk more about that in just a few minutes. Well, we know last year in April, the Department of Justice made a change to Title II, which governs public and educational, government and educational institutions at the state level in the area of accessibility. So we now have a ruling in place that within 2 years, or April 24th of 2026, this is a sort of a sticky law in that it kind of depends on how many people are in the state, not necessarily in education or in a specific government institution, but it's more about how many people in the population of the state. But for most of us, the 2 year deadline applies, meaning that if you have more than 50,000 or 50,000 constituents, then this rule applies to you. If you have less than that, then you get an additional year to work on ensuring that things are fully accessible. So, what has to be accessible in this 2 year period? It's about websites and the content around them. That's the real difficult part, is the content around them, right? Because you can build technology that's fully accessible, And but if you have an editor who's posting information and it's not accessible, that's where things get challenging. And then the other part of this, which was rather intriguing, was centered around mobile applications, meaning those things that we use on our iPhones or Android phones. They have to be accessible too. And if they are not, then after this deadline, then people can choose to file complaints and lawsuits pertaining to the lack of accessibility of websites or content or mobile applications. Okay, so that's where we are now. Now, whether or not the Department of Justice follows through on this will be interesting, but we think that they will. There's precedent for it, so we think that they will. We'll see. Okay, let's talk about what you now can do in reference to understanding the landscape of you're running into a problem, and how do you solve it? Well, the guidelines that you need to be focusing in on, and these are not ones that you need to go out and study or, you know, print out or put on your Victor Reader Stream and take them to bed with you and try to get some reading done and fall asleep. These are the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. And they're kind of wordy and all of that. But really, ladies and gentlemen, this comes down to some core things that are really fundamental. Can I actually use the site or the application with my screen reader of choice? And if not, then what do I do? Okay. Most of the issues that we're running into based on the WebAIM survey fall into just a few categories, really, but they're prevalent. 97% of the web is seen as not accessible. It's a kind of a interesting stat, but for the most part, things are definitely looking up. We know that, for example, people tend to use screen reader users love to use headings, not so much landmarks, but they love to use headings, and they love to make sure that we have alternative text on images. And if we could just get these things done, we'd be a lot further ahead. The problems that we run into these days, though, become far more complex in reference to us shopping online or attempting to fill out a job application or any of these types of things where they have really, really rich web user experiences, and they test them pretty aggressively, especially for sighted people, and they forget that we also need keyboard access. Okay? And oftentimes we see situations like buttons don't activate using the keyboard, the tab order is out of order, you know, these types of things. Okay? Whatever the issue might be, you need to do a few things to try to communicate these things to the vendor that you are working with. Most vendors these days have ways of gaining access to providing feedback in some way, shape, or form in trying to get problems solved. So let's talk about how do we go about doing this in a step-by-step approach. First of all, I'm going to tell you that community is important. So if you are running into a problem, then reach out, right? Because it could be, and I consider myself a pretty advanced user myself, it could be that it's a user situation. You're not understanding exactly how to fill something out, or maybe it's telling you that there is a required field to be entered, but you don't know which one it is. By the way, this happens all the time. And you can post to a list, whether it's here locally, or you can even reach out across ACB or within BITS, whatever you want to do, and simply ask a question, right? Reach out to people who you know may have the answer. And chances are they may not, okay? So that's your first step in all of this. Secondly, make sure, and I tell this to students all the time, make sure, and you don't have to be an expert in each screen reader, but you should at least be knowledgeable enough to be able to test with multiple. We know, for example, that JAWS for Windows is a great product, and it's actually the screen reader of choice for myself. But we know that it's not going to solve all problems for all applications, right? It's just not possible. It's not feasible. So that's why we have things like NVDA and even Narrator at times, okay? So try the application, try the website with another screen reader and see if it can be solved. Now, that doesn't mean that you should ignore the fact that it's not working with whatever screen reader that you are using as your primary screen reader, okay? We'll come back to that in just a minute. If you're not able to deal with the website and whatever the technical problem may be after doing this, then it's time to define the problem, okay? Make sure that before you start communicating with whoever, the Amazons, the Apples, the Microsofts, the Googles, the whoever, right? It could be any number of companies that might face these types of situations. So, whoever that is, these principles apply. You need to, don't worry about the technical, okay? It's not about the technical. Let the people who write code worry about the technical, all right? In fact, it's not your job to know that. As a user, it's something that you shouldn't have to deal with necessarily. If you have that skill, certainly, then use it. But don't think that you can't be effective in reporting issues and seeking a path to get it resolved. All right? The most important thing that you can do, and this is whether you're talking about something on the web or you're talking about a bug in Microsoft Word or Outlook or PowerPoint or whatever the case may be, is to define the problem clearly. Okay? So that means that start a document and pick whatever you want to use, doesn't matter. Notepad would be fine. Although Notepad for me has not been my friend as much. They're adding too much to it these days. That's a different conversation at a different time. So open up a document and first tell, you're not writing the letter at this point. You're not writing a letter to the organization at this point. You're trying to define the problem as it is known to you, okay? So first define what you're trying to solve. I am trying to shop online and buy a gift for Father's Day for my father, okay? All right, and I'm unable to use the website. I'm on Lowe's and I cannot check out. I'm getting an error of some kind. Here are the steps that I'm attempting, all right? This is very important. They need to know what you're trying to do. I'm browsing to this website. I added this item to the cart. And by the way, if there's issues along the way where you're describing what you're doing, it's okay to note them. I noticed that the add to cart button is not labeled. And the only reason I found it was because I was able to locate a link that was close to the product and I activated it and that seemed to work. But it would be great to have it, So these are your notes, okay? This is not what you're writing as a letter necessarily to the company in question here, all right? So define what you're trying to accomplish and then define clearly from a user perspective what happened. I was unable to do X or I was not able to complete Y transaction. And then explain in as basic of terms as possible why you were not able to complete that process, okay? From a user perspective. All right, now, you have access to a document here that clearly states the problem to be solved, some issues along the way that might have been encountered, and what your outcomes were from trying to attempt this process. Now, I'm gonna give you a bit of a sneak peek here. And I'm a firm believer in this. I don't think that we should ignore technology. Technology is a great thing as long as we use it ethically and responsibly and also check its work, right? We know that if we're going to use technology such as AI, then we need to make sure that we are checking it for validity, correctness, and that we're thorough. Okay, and we would do that anyway, right? If you're writing a term paper or you're writing something for your job or whatever that might be, you're going to do that anyway. So as long as you have defined the problem, you've defined the website address, you know, you put that in there, you define the steps that you took and be very, very clear and methodical. These things matter, by the way. Missing one little key thing matters. So be very complete in the way that you're defining the problem. And then you can do one of two things. You can write your own letter, which is fine. You know, to whom it may concern, I am writing on behalf of, whatever organization or just you individually concerning the website, and then you could put the link there or and you know, make it professional and add the link title to it and all of those things. And I am a blind consumer. I am utilizing this product that is at this release, right? They need to know. So if you're running JAWS 2023 because you have not been able to upgrade, that's fine. That's fine. Just make sure they're aware of that, okay? And then, you know, clearly take the document that you wrote and summarize as much as possible the information contained in it, okay? You can also attach that document as well. You could tell, you know, in your letter you can say, and by the way, here is the working document I worked from. If you find it of value, here it is. That's one approach you can take, okay? And you want to make sure that you're pointing people to resources. So make sure that you're linking out to, you know, the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. Google is your friend here. But I'm going to make this even easier for you, because I think that we've gotten to the point these days where you can utilize other technology to help you craft this letter and get 95% of it done. It's probably going to require a little bit more work, but you're going to have the majority of this done. And again, we're going to talk a lot about this tomorrow, but it's okay to use AI in this case. Now, there's a couple of foundational rules and concepts that need to be followed here. You need to make sure that you're complete. You need to give it the document that you wrote initially to define the problem. You need to discuss the intent of the message you are trying to convey. And by the way, kindness works wonders at first. Meaning, we don't need to jump to lawsuits and all of those fun things, right? First of all, they cost money, and it's not worth your time or frankly, the company's time if we can work together to solve problems. So work as a partner. Work as a partner with the company to try to solve the issue. Now, there's other vehicles you can take later. Especially if it violates a federal law, then you can file complaints with the FCC or whatever the case may be. But let's start simple, because most of the time, if you communicate effectively and kindly, you can probably apt to get a better response from people than what you would get if you run in guns blazing, okay? So give AI as much information. You're going to hear this repeated a lot tomorrow. Context matters. So give it as much data as you can and clearly state what you want your outcome to be. I need a professional letter which documents the inaccessibility of the Lowe's. By the way, I'm not using Lowe's because it's inaccessible. So please understand. Lowe's, if you're here, we love you. Okay. Or if you're listening on ACB Media. Okay. So, I'm running in, you know, it's okay to be wordy with AI. It will fix it for you. I am running into a problem. The problem is defined here, and you can give it all the data that you wrote up. Please write a professional letter that explains the urgency of the matter, but that it needs to be polite, professional, and kind, and that you're willing to do what you can to assist them in further understanding the issue, right? In other words, be very, 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 very clear about your intent, okay? Then you can pick your AI model of choice or AI platform of choice, ChatGPT. You can use Microsoft Copilot. You can use Google Gemini. You could use any number of them, and it will generate a document for you. You can even say, I want a Microsoft Word document. You know, I want... whatever file format you want, you can ask it to do. And it will give you a letter. But your job's not done. Now you're going to download this thing and you're going to read it. And you're going to find that, especially in situations like this where you're feeding it information, it's going to do a darn good job, right? Oh, and by the way, make sure to tell AI to include resources on accessibility fundamentals, and especially if they relate to the issue that you're reporting, and it will do that too, okay? Open up the Word document, read it, make sure that it meets your ethical, that it's right? In other words, that it's not hallucinating, that it's not making something up, that it's professional, kind, courteous, all of those lovely things that Boy Scouts like to be, and Girl Scouts too, by the way. So if it is, you're done. You find out who you're going to contact, and you ship this off, okay? That's really the first step. Now, there's additional things you can do along the way if you're not getting a response. This is where you want to reach out to, things like ACB and email accessibility@acb.org and ask for them to see if they can, get involved from at least understanding the problem. In fact, they can even potentially cast a net and say who else is having issues on X website, and they can come up with a more interesting approach of trying to get their attention in reference to these issues that have to be solved, okay? So, again, it's about leading with kindness. It's about leading with detail. You don't need to worry about the technical, because unless you're a software engineer or you're a web developer and you understand all of these things, first of all, the person that's going to be reading that initially doesn't have those skills, by the way. The person that's going to read that has no idea what you're talking about if you do that. So, it's not necessary. You can attach it if you want, but you don't have to necessarily, include that. In fact, the better off you are defining the problem from your personal experience. Storytelling is powerful. I cannot tell you how powerful that really is. And making it real. Let's pretend we have a mother and she's trying to fill out a FAFSA for her student, and FAFSAs are just so much fun and complicated, aren't they? And these are the forms you had to fill out to try to get, money to go to college, financial aid and assistance and loans and these types of things. And can you imagine, I don't think this is happening these days, but can you imagine a situation such as this? This has impacted my son's ability to be effective in his college career path, because we were not able to be as quick at determining how much funding would be available for him and what schools he should be applying to, right? In other words, it's about storytelling. So part of the crafting of this is making sure that you're crafting great stories around the problem that you're trying to solve and expressing the quote impact, quote, right? Impact. So communication and impact are crucial to getting someone's attention. Sometimes these are simple things, meaning that, they're not that important, but sometimes they're not. Sometimes these are situations that are really crucial. Being able to fill out information for your doctor, or being able to get onto websites to get lab results for test results. There's all kinds of different things here that could come into play, and some of them are not as important, but they have higher bars of severity to them. But every person's role or every person's item that they're wanting to achieve on the web is just as important to them. So it's about you driving this scenario by impact. All right, I could talk a lot more about other factors and going off and testing and all of these things, but really this is about how can I achieve more. Silence is not golden. Silence is not golden, people. You need to make sure that if you have a problem, tell someone, okay? Don't be shy. It's okay. Be polite, be kind, be courteous, all of those things, But be, you know, gently assertive in explaining the problem from your perspective. Okay? And that's true whether you're talking to Microsoft, you're talking to Google, Amazon, whatever that is, it doesn't matter who the company is, the problems are real. Okay? So just don't be silent. That really is ultimately the thing that you need to be hearing here. Do not be silent. If you need help in crafting the letter, or you need help in defining the problem, or clearly defining the steps that you took, then that's what the community is for, right? You have literally thousands of people inside of ACB, and you have great leaders here like Paul and others here that are tremendously helpful, and they know how to do this stuff. They've been doing it for decades. Yes, exactly. And I'm getting up there. So don't be afraid to use great mentors and be able to craft the message that you feel you need to convey to whomever it needs to be conveyed to. Okay? Yes, it can be daunting. Yes, it can be difficult. Yes, it can be intimidating even at times doing this. But don't let it be. You're just telling your story of what you're trying to accomplish, okay? So that's the best advice I can give to you at the moment. There's a lot more to this that if it escalates, then come back to us and we can have further discussions on where you go from here. But it's always best to, you know, use structured negotiation as much as possible and have great conversations about solving issues. And, you know, most web issues these days, by the way, are very easily solvable. They're not hugely complex. What tends to happen here is people don't think about accessibility at the front end of a project, and then they build out this project, right? And they forget about accessibility, and then now they have a mess on their hands. And yes, it's going to take longer, but individual issues are pretty easily solvable as long as you understand what the intent and the process flow is that you're trying to achieve. And that's where you as the consumer play a significant role on defining your user experience, okay? The big companies, they spend hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars on this type of stuff where they're just going off and they're looking at end user experience, okay? And these are the types of questions they're asking. Well, how would you want to do it? And why isn't it working for you? Tell us how you're thinking in your process, okay? So whether it's working or it's not, in this case, it's not, be clear and concise about what you're trying to achieve here. Tell them exactly the steps that are required that you took to be able to get to point A to point B so that they understand exactly how you got there. Because it could be, again, it could be end user error, which, by the way, is still their problem. Because if it's not clear enough for you to figure out, then it's a problem, right? In other words, if they can't direct you well, then they're not communicating something effectively. So that's still their problem to be solved, right? Whether that's just telling you what to do or solving it technically, you know, that's what you need to do. All right. Now, I have waffled on for quite a while here. Do we have time for questions or no? So the House just reintroduced the bill that's going to drive yes, that's right. Yep. And by the way, we used something similar to this when Microsoft decided to ship Windows 10 with inaccessible web browsers and email clients and PDF reading. And so these laws are real, people, meaning that if passed, you now have something to hang a shingle on. And so this is where you as consumers need to get in touch with your members of the House of Representatives and then hopefully the Senate and impress upon them the importance of passing this legislation and getting it signed by the president. The legislation itself really directs the because remember, laws are really meant for government activity, really directs that websites, applications, and these types of things remain, you know, completely accessible here. We used laws similar to this for even getting things like audio description in place, and ensuring that, especially if we have websites and services that, from a communications perspective, that those are also accessible. Okay, so it's really the legislation that drives with some teeth to assist us in this process. Okay, again, it's all about being aware of you know, what items can be, you know, keeping up to date on ACB Announce and, you know, these types of things to be able to help you in this process. Okay.
What do we have? Do we have questions? Okay.
Here's my question. When these bills get sponsored, I'm assuming ACB keeps track of who has co-sponsored in that. Is there a way for them to share that information so we know if our House rep has signed on to it? I'm involved with another Ovarian Cancer Research Alliance, and so our bill that we're really pushing and stuff, like yesterday I just got an email showing an update of who has, you know, who the sponsors are and the co-sponsors and that. Thanks.
Yeah, actually, Claire had sent this out yesterday to the ACB Announce list. That's why I mentioned it here. And I can get this to you know, people here. I'm sure Mikey has it and others have it, so they can disseminate this more widely. It was reintroduced on the 14th, the day before Global Accessibility Awareness Day. It's kind of cool how all of this took place just around the time of Global Accessibility Awareness Day. And it actually shows here who the sponsors were. We are also working in ACB in coming up with a tool to allow you to very quickly and easily locate your House of Representative members and senators, no matter where you live. This is a project that we've been working on to try to make very easy for you to do. You simply, you know, the intent is you simply go to a website, you put in your zip code, and it will give you all the information you ever wanted to have about both local, state, and federal representation that's available publicly. All this information is available pretty widely. So yes, we can get this to you very easily, actually. Yep.
I don't really have a question. I have a comment. I think, and I just tried to look it up on my phone and I can't find it, that the web access bill was introduced, and Claire Stanley sent out something this morning, but I didn't have the time to read the entire email. So if you're on the FCB listserv, all you got to do is read that email that I forwarded this morning or get on the announce list.
Yep. Anything else? All right. We'll see everybody tomorrow.
In closing, I guess what I'd say is you see that there are tools and people ready to help us gain the access that is ours. And I know how frustrating it is when you've completed a project on a website and you can't submit the darn thing. Nothing happens because you've missed something along the way that had to be included, but it was you never saw the link, you never saw the button, you never. I have two or three people that I go to and I say, help, and they go, oh, well, you missed this. That's not necessary. So what I'm going to say is we have to take advantage of the help that is ours. And I want to thank you all for coming today. We will be calling on you to help us do our jobs because all of us are equals in this process. And so thank you for coming. And please, please, please Come tomorrow to hear what Jeff is going to say to us about artificial intelligence. I just want to put in this one little plug and then we'll go. I needed a device to help me with something. And I went out on ChatGPT and I put in the information and what I wanted this and needed this device to do. And I got several possibilities. But what I loved about it was the one thing that it was crucial for it to do was only available in one little device. So I went over to Google and I looked up this device and I read what they had to say about it. Then went on Amazon and I ordered the thing. Then when the device came, I went back out on ChatGPT and I put in that I wanted to hear all of the use instructions for this little device and to make sure I wanted to make sure that I had put it together properly. And all of this came to me. I picked out my own device. I chose my own device. I ordered it independently. It came. I made sure I knew how to use it independently. And I did double check one thing with Ira that I wasn't quite sure of, but old ChatGPT had it right. So what I'm going to say is this information, as I've told you a million times, is power. So whether you're afraid of AI or whether you embrace it, I am just so insatiably curious about all this stuff. And I just urge you to listen and evaluate. The decision you make will be yours, but you won't know unless you come and hear this brilliant man speak to us tomorrow about artificial intelligence. So please do come tomorrow, and thank you for coming today. And bye-bye for now.